You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We are very committed to Deshaun as our quarterback. He is our quarterback. He's the only guy we got under contract at this time right now.
Are you guys trading Deshaun Watson?
Deshaun Watson is a Houston Texan, and we're committed to him.
Is he committed to you and the team?
Yes, he is.
Is he committed to you and the team? Yes, he is. Stephen A., do you have a problem with how the Texans are handling this? Obviously, that was their new head coach, David Culley, because we know that Deshaun Watson wants to be moved.
Well, I do. And let me say this for the record. I have a problem, and I'm going to accuse the Houston Texans on national television for using a black man as a stooge to promote their position, which is embarrassing. David Culley is not at fault here. This man busted his tail and worked hard and waited 27 years to become a head coach in the National Football League. If you're the McNairs, if it's Cal McNair, you come to hell on camera and speak. It's your team. You're the CEO, it's your team. Where are you at, okay? Your new GM, Caserio, you come out there and you speak, okay? To have this coach speaking about Deshaun Watson, and I'm quite sure he had a press conference, why is he talking to the media right now, Max? What purpose does it serve? He just got there. And the news is clearly about Deshaun Watson. There's nothing else that you do. He wasn't the coach. It was Bill O'Brien that was the coach when you trade DeAndre Hopkins and you don't get a first-round pick, when you trade Jadeveon Clowney and don't get equitable compensation, when you wait a year and, 10 years and a day, for crying out loud, to get a left tackle. That was all on Bill O'Brien, who's hiding in Tuscaloosa behind Nick Saban as we speak. And I'm not trying to cast aspersions on Bill O'Brien. There's a lot of things that he's done wrong. What I'm putting on Bill O'Brien is that if there was anybody that should have to be front and center speaking on some of these issues that's going on with the Houston Texans, it should be him. But obviously, he's no longer employed by them, so it's reasonable to expect that he would have nothing to say. But to have David Culley up there speaking, what the hell is he supposed to say? This man's happy to have the head coaching job. He waited 27 years to get the job. And in 27 years, you finally get the job. The quarterback doesn't want to be there any longer. You got nobody else under contract. What the hell is he talking for? See, this is the kind of stuff that black coaches lament all the time. The positions that they're put in. Okay? Now, I'm very pleased with Steve Nash as a person and the job that he's doing in Brooklyn. But you see the difference? You see the situation he walked into? All you got to do is coach. That's it. KD, Kyrie, James Harden. All you got to do is coach. Sean Marks is leading that organization. Executive of the year, as far as I'm concerned. We see what he's doing between him and Daryl Morey with Elton Brand and those boys. But I'm just saying, look at the situation. But then you got a guy like David Culley in Houston. You just got there. You got no power. And they got you speaking front of center about things you absolutely positively can't control. Meanwhile, a brother in the quarterback, Deshaun Watson, has made it very, very clear he doesn't want to be there, but he's not trying to come out front and center because he doesn't want to be disrespectful. That's why he met with the man, Max. He met with the man because he knows it's a black man here. He ain't do anything wrong to me. I'm trying to show him the respect that he deserves. Let me not refuse to meet with him. Let me meet him face to face and let him know, look, this is my intent. It's no disrespect to you. You weren't a part of this organization, but I don't want to be here any longer. But the Houston Texans got David Culley speaking. With all the questions that we have about this organization, its treatment of players, DeAndre Johnson of the world, the DeAndre Hopkins of the world, even the J.J. Watts of the world, and clearly the Deshaun Watson of the world, with all the speculation that has been thrown out there about the Houston Texans organization, you got a black man that got a job for the first time as a head coach after 27 years as an assistant, and he's the one you have speaking?
Sweating up at the podium, lying.
It's embarrassing. Yeah. And it's not his fault. This is not me going off on David Culley. He's done nothing wrong. It's the organization with their weak, pathetic selves putting him in that position. Cal McNair, where the hell are you? What you hiding for? Come out front and center. Don't put this man up there in front of everybody to answer questions your behind is supposed to be answering. Where the hell are you?
Well, what I was going to say about how the Texans are handling this situation was what do you want them to do? They have to front like Deshaun Watson's their quarterback or they're not going to get trade value for him. I still believe he'll be traded, and this is just a way to front. And I don't think it's fooling anybody, by the way. But I want to spend my time instead responding to what you just said, Stephen A., because I think it's important. Why is Deshaun Watson displeased with the Texans, right? Does it have something to do with Jack Easterby, who is now running the whole show? Cal McNair, the owner, took the team chaplain and eventually put him in charge of the whole thing.
The team chaplain.
Right. I mean, that's fine. You might have, as I said, an awesome dentist. But if you're on trial for your life, maybe hire an attorney, not the dentist, right? Yes. Might be an awesome chaplain. He's horrible so far at running a team. They spent money. Remember, Deshaun Watson's told he's going to be consulted, and they spent money on a search for an executive. And the search firm came back with some candidates, and some of them were people of color. And Cal McNair decided, nope, we're going to take Nick Caserio. That's who I want. Against the advice of the firm that they hired and spent money on, and without consulting Deshaun Watson, they just went ahead and did that. And then they hired David Culley, which, from where I'm sitting, is transparent. If you're taking a PR hit because of what I just mentioned, and you hire an African-American head coach, you think you have some protection there. However, he's 65 years old. Obviously, he's not in your long-term plans, or you wouldn't hire a 65-year-old. So Cal McNair, Jack Easterby, you're not fooling anybody. In fact, it seems to me, I feel, watching this unfold, like you're disrespecting the intelligence of the people you're trying to entertain with your team, you know? That how naive or how gullible do you think people are? David Culley, meantime, Stephen A., came out and said, he was asked, is Deshaun Watson committed to the team? And he said, yes. And I will take that to mean he has a contract. You have to honor your contract. But David Culley knows that's not what's meant by the question. What's meant by the question is, do you think Deshaun Watson wants to be there? Deshaun Watson has explicitly stated publicly he doesn't want to be there. So the reason I kind of threw out what I was going to say is because I think it's important to focus on what you brought up. It is the reason it feels uncomfortable to watch David Culley do that is because, put in simplest terms, it is a black man who's being thrown out to basically do a spin control on a bad situation.
Involving a black quarterback.
Involving a black quarterback and the white owner and the team chaplain, who's also white, who been elevated
has a problem with.
To team czar,
right.
Are nowhere to be found.
That's right. Nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. And that this is the kind of stuff that gets complained about behind the scenes. And then you got folks out there with their idiotic stuff. Oh, you know, Stephen A., here you go again, Stephen A. I mean, why you got to bring up race? Why do I have to bring up race? Why? Just answer, instead of asking me that question, ask yourself that question. Why do I have to bring it up? Because it keeps happening. That's why. Cal McNair, where the hell are you? You run this franchise. SWB, you run it. He put you in charge. You are a chaplain. He put you in charge. Okay? Deshaun Watson, a star who just months ago, less than a year ago, literally was tearful and crying because of his appreciation for the organization having faith in him, turns around less than a year later and wants nothing to do with you. How did that happen? How is that a question for the coach that just arrived after 27 years as an assistant? He's a first-time head coach. Even the GM, you got him there. He just arrived. It's not his fault. Where is Kyle McNair? You run the team. You gave the contract. This man said he wants nothing to do with you. And oh, by the way, I didn't even bring up the fact that even though it's two different positions, and even though J.J. Watt was a model citizen and an all-pro, perennial all-pro defensive player of the year three times over, the man walked into your office and said, I don't want to be here any longer. And they said, sure, you can leave.
Well,
but Deshaun Watson, look, bro.
Well, because he's much
anywhere.
More valuable to the franchise.
I
would say this. That indicates, the J.J. Watt thing shows me J.J. Watt didn't want to be there. DeAndre Hopkins probably got hard feelings, you would imagine, right?
Right.
Obviously, Andre Johnson is not happy with the team. These are the biggest icons in the history of the franchise. And I just want to say something on your behalf, Stephen A. There are many reasons to go, oh, Stephen A., his foolish opinions, his losing the debate with me day after day. There are lots of reasons to get on Stephen A. But bringing up race and making people aware of it, where sometimes it doesn't feel like it's applicable, is a valuable service you're doing. And that is not a reason to get on Stephen A. Smith.
Deshaun Watson, they're essentially saying, we don't give a damn what you feel. You ain't going nowhere. You think that's going to work in today's climate in 2021? I don't want to play for you, but you're going to make him? Really?
Absolutely we'll see. Not. It's an impossible situation also for David Culley, who's forced to do the dirty work. Yeah. That was one of your strongest takes in a long time, Stephen A. That was tremendous. And I hope it gets played all over social media, because you're right in so many ways.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5X miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Breaking news this morning on ESPN. The Patriots are finalizing a one-year deal worth close to $14 million for Cam Newton to return to New England. Meanwhile, on the exact same day, Tom Brady signing an extension with the Bucs that ties him to the organization through the 2022 season. Max, I want to start with you. What do these deals say about New England's decision-making?
Well, I think the number one thing it says is that Belichick recognized the team and franchise was in a period of transition. He did not believe in Brady's long-term future, which I didn't either, and I can't blame Belichick. You know, when a quarterback turns 39, 40, even if you're missing the weapons and you start to see slippage, in the history of football, every single time until now, what that means is he's going to be finished shortly. Tom Brady was the exception that proved the rule, but he shattered the rule. And that would be hard for someone to foresee. Belichick's succession plan was Jimmy Garoppolo. That was the guy he thought was going to carry the team into the future. Brady had Garoppolo traded, did an end around Belichick, the GM and coach, and went right to Robert Kraft. And next thing you knew, Garoppolo's in San Francisco for another great coach, by the way, great offensive coordinator, had a lot of success as a head coach.
Until the Super Bowl, we'll go ahead.
But, I mean, they got to the Super Bowl, and had Garoppolo completed one more pass, like, they win the Super Bowl. So
he's got outscored by 40 points in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. Okay. But go ahead.
I mean, okay. They came one. You've brought it up. Emmanuel Sanders, if he hits Emmanuel Sanders, they win the Super Bowl. That's as close as you get. The point is, without Garoppolo, the cupboard is bare. And so Belichick, recognizing that he's in a transitional phase, not believing in Brady's future, and Brady proved him and me and others wrong, has to look around for a guy he believes in. He believes in to set the right culture. He believes in can actually get the team wins and maybe to the playoffs and serve as a not too expensive placeholder while he finds his long-term quarterback.
Here's my thing. I can't blame Bill Belichick, because we're not talking about Bill Belichick, the coach. We're talking about Bill Belichick, the executive. We're also talking about Bill Belichick, the person. And I'm not meaning, when I say that, Max, I'm not talking about character assassinating him in any way. I don't know Bill Belichick. All I know him to be is a phenomenal football, a brilliant football mind with the credentials that are pretty that are just more impeccable than anybody in NFL history. And he certainly has my profound respect, and I think anybody who knows anything about football. Here's where I would not Bill Belichick, however. You work with Tom Brady. You nurtured him. You helped him along the way. And I don't believe that Bill Belichick, if you want to use the words turned against Tom Brady or whatever the case may be, I don't think that was about football at all. I think what happened is that Tom Brady got to a point, took pay cuts, got less than his market value, won Super Bowls, kept them as perennial contenders, et cetera, et cetera. He got to a point where he felt like he was due more deference and respect from Bill Belichick than he had received. You don't necessarily need, nor should you require Bill Belichick to quote unquote kiss the ring, but you're not just anybody else either. You are Tom Brady. And I think that he felt at one time or another that he deserved to be treated that way, whether it was contractually, whether it was more than a one-year commitment, whether it was not riding him about being TB12 and connecting with that dude in terms of his conditioning and all of that other stuff and practicing and working out on his own, that kind of thing. I think along the way, the friction ultimately just ballooned to a point where it ultimately burst. If you remember, before Tom Brady departed, I came right here on First Take and I reported. I was told, if Bill Belichick wants Tom Brady to stay, Tom Brady stays, period. They would have worked it out. The problem was, in order for that to happen, Bill Belichick had to go to Tom Brady and say, I don't want to lose you. I want you to stay. And Bill Belichick, according to my sources, refused to do that. So because of that, that reality right there says to me, it wasn't football. It was something more than that. And at the end, because Bill Belichick is so great, we've never taken the opportunity to step back and say, sir, you're phenomenal. You're great. You're the GOAT as a coach. Your resume says so. But you're not perfect. And in the end, is it possible that you allowed your ego and your level of defiance to get in the way of what was in the best interest football-wise for the New England Patriots? It's possible that Bill Belichick made that mistake for those reasons rather than whatever slippage you thought you saw.
Ego was definitely involved on both sides, I think.
Yeah, but Tom Brady's validated that his ego was justified. That's the difference.
Well, that's right. So far, Belichick has a lot to prove. And Duncan and Popovich came to it with much more humility, I think, and Brady and Belichick with more arrogance. And Duncan and Popovich, you know, did the whole thing together, and Brady and Belichick.
If you want to act the way you wanted to act before Garoppolo left, that's one thing. But once you lost Garoppolo, you should have held on to Brady for dear life. You don't go from Brady to Cam Newton. I'm sorry.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But I do want to say one thing, though. I thought this was my building, and I feel terrible that I'm getting stopped, accosted, asking for passes. Everybody in this building should know who the hell I am, and I'm getting stopped. I can't move around this building. Like I was like, what the hell? Is this Madison Square Garden? I'm going to have to call Mr. Dolan and say, geez, is my number in the rafters or what?
After a huge win for his Hoyas over Nova in the Big East tournament, Patrick Ewing expressed that disappointment with Madison Square Garden security. Take a look at the Daily News headline right there. But I know Spike Lee, and so do we here on First Take, and we are lucky to have the star of MSG courtside, a fellow New Yorker, and
brother,
the one and only Spike.
Orange
That's all
blue.
I gotta say.
Orange
Spike!
Hey,
how could
I love
you wear
it.
That
Still
today?
Loyal, always. A fixture
How's
courtside at all
doing?
Knicks games.
We're great.
We're
man.
Hanging in, Spike. How you doing?
Day by day. That's all we can do, day by day. And I'm not talking about sports. I'm just talking about the world we live in.
That's right.
I'm very happy
One
to say that.
One day at a time.
I've had
with you, sir.
Two Pfizer shots, so...
Nice.
Lucky. Good. Congrats. I took my
great.
First one Tuesday.
Good.
I took my first one Tuesday.
Getting them at the end of the month.
Good. Seeing the light at the end of the
Let's
tunnel
go.
Here. But I don't know about the light at the end of the tunnel for your Knicks. Spike, what is your reaction to what happened to Patrick Ewing, of all people?
You know, we're one game over 500 going into the second half of the season. I see clear blue skies. I'm thinking we're going to make the playoffs. You know, we're going to have an impact. And then yesterday happens. And I'm not blaming this on Dolan, but there has to be something just wrong at Madison Square Garden. Can any of you imagine Derek Jeter being stopped entering Yankee Stadium?
Yeah.
Magic Johnson being stopped entering the Staples Center?
Yeah.
Michael Jordan, the GOAT. Yeah. Don't hate. Yeah. Michael Jordan being stopped entering the United Center? WTF.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aquaman being stopped entering the ocean? I mean, like, it's unbelievable. The Pope at the Vatican? What's the analogy?
Too. You stole that from me, Max.
Right. Did I?
Yeah.
No,
Pope
I didn't.
At the Vatican. That was coming.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
My
why
fault.
Why are you stealing my stuff?
I said it in the first hour. I can't retroactively bite. Stop right. that. Spike,
I got
but
them
this
powers,
is,
though, man. I got them powers.
Spike, this is what I'm saying. They, you know, there's a poem about the Holocaust. You know, first they came for the socialists, and I didn't say anything. Then they came, and then eventually they came for me, and there was no one left to speak. They already came for you. They came for you already, Spike, and you're still riding with them. They come from Pat. They came for Oakley. They came for you, still riding with him, making excuses for him.
The Trinity.
They came for Patrick, the Holy Trinity of the Knicks of the last 40 years. Boy, John Starks better watch his back.
Well, I will say this. Listen, on a more playful level, all the people that Spike Lee mentioned, all of them won championships. We're still waiting for ours. It's been since 1973. Jeter, Jordan, guys like that, they want chips. That wasn't the case with Ewing. But on a more serious level, he means that much to Madison Square Garden. He should mean that much to New Yorkers. The only level of credibility we've had pretty much over the last three decades, has been because of Patrick Ewing. And on a more serious note, where Spike doesn't blame, you don't blame James Dolan, I do. And here's why. Because we ain't talking about the Knicks. We're talking about Madison Square Garden. We're talking about personnel there. They know who Patrick Ewing is. They knew who Spike Lee was and is. They knew who Charles Oakley was and is. The common denominator where you're alluding to a lack of respect and a lack of appreciation emanates from that man right there, James Dolan. And that's where I have the problem. If you held folks in high regard and you celebrated with a level of appreciation these individuals for what they meant to the franchise, everyone would march lockstep and nobody would give any problems. Think about that for a second here. There's no way enough. We can go back to what happened to you, Spike. Don't tell me, and even you acknowledge, that was the security personnel there. They didn't want to bother you. They were compelled to do so.
Those are good dudes. Security at MSG, come on, man. Those are good dudes. They've been there for years.
And I like to say this. It was two brothers.
Yeah.
And they were in a jam.
Yeah.
They didn't want it. They didn't want to.
They didn't want to do that.
They didn't want to escort me out the garden.
Of course not.
Around the corner to come back in, knowing that I couldn't come back in because my ticket had been scanned already. They didn't want to do that. And I didn't want to do anything to get those brothers to lose their job. So it was a tight jam.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm not even making jokes, Spike. It doesn't take two security guards to walk Spike Lee out of the garden. If they're like, even that is like a show of force. That's like, I don't get it.
Max, let me give you a couple of tidbits and notes here. I remember when the Jonathan Sopranowitz of the world, who used to work for the New York Knicks, came rushing over because there was something that was going on with Oakley and stuff like that at the time. And I was at the Garden. And I'm standing in the tunnel, and he runs over towards me. You can't stand there. You can't stand there. Reporters before games walk around stuff like that. But somehow, some way, you know what? At the Garden, you got to get the hell out of there. You had players that are scared to communicate. Why? Because they feel like somebody might have access to their phone, their text messages, or who they're receiving phone calls from. This is the environment that existed at Madison Square Garden. I'm not talking about the Knicks. I'm talking about inside Madison Square Garden. It doesn't matter what's going on there. This is the level of petrified that people have had there in recent memory. There's one common denominator.
Dolan.
And that's James Dolan.
But and Spike, one. Stephen A. brought it up. You brought it up off the top. People are starting to feel good. This is why I'm saying I'm never coming back to the Knicks as long as Dolan owns the team. Even when he seems to get out of his own way, finally, and put in a regime, and he's put in a lot of them, and this one seems to work right away. They've done an outstanding job. The culture's healthy. And all of a sudden,
my mindset, we're in the middle of a pandemic. 500,000 Americans, fathers, fathers, mothers, sisters, relatives, friends, are no longer here. So my mindset is, look, that stuff that happened before, I'm like, I'm peace and love trying to move forward. The last thing I wanted to do was be involved somehow with Dolan again. And it happened. It wasn't my fault. Now the whole thing has happened again. I thought this story would be dead between me and Dolan.
It's like Al Pacino.
Now Pat added to me and Oakley.
It's like Al Pacino and The Godfather. They keep bringing me back. They keep bringing me back. Listen, the reason why I'm protective of the Knicks right now is because I think Leon Rose, Worldwide William Wesley, Scott Perry, Tom Thibodeau have done an outstanding job of getting you to focus on what the Knicks are doing. They're competitive almost every night. They fight, they scratch, they claw, and they're winning. Just as much
play
as they're
defense.
Losing, if not a little more now. They're one of the elite defensive teams in the game. You don't get fast breaks on them. You don't shoot a bunch of threes on them. They're moving in the right direction. But somehow, some way, something that happens in Madison Square Garden, there's always something that infiltrates the proceedings and messes with whatever positive headlines the New York Knicks provide you. And it always comes from nonsense like this. It's ridiculous.
The Knicks.
It's ridiculous.
The Knicks.
I'm not jumping off the Knicks bandwagon, though, because there's no reason to jump off. I wouldn't do that. But Dolan's getting on my damn nerves because he can resolve all of this.
Oh, no,
he really could.
Let me tell you something. You and Spike,
let me know
both
when
of y'all.
I can go
hold on, Holly, real
again.
Quick. Real quick, both of y'all.
Yeah.
He's not getting on your nerves. There's no breaking point. There's got to be the straw that breaks the camel's back eventually, right? Like, for me, when I was like, that's it, my hands are washed of them, it was Oakley. It's like, no, 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 I really can't mess with them anymore after that. And Spike, it was you, and now it's Patrick Ewing. What does it take? You realize all you need to do in New York, as the Nets just showed, is just for a year or two, show people you have a healthy culture, and then New York sells itself. You're going to get the biggest superstars in the world. Why would anyone come to this franchise now? Just like they look like they're turning a corner. Look what they just did.
What do you want me to say?
Can I ask you what I asked? Let me ask you what I asked the guys earlier, because I tried to play devil's advocate. They shut me down, but let me try to do it again here. What if it's this young kid who's not a sports fan or doesn't know who Patrick Ewing is, or is told that if someone doesn't have an ID, you're going to lose your job? You mentioned the pandemic. You know, a lot of people, there's all different issues going on. People need to earn a paycheck. What do you say to that?
Molly, may I tell Spike my answer before he answers? May I tell him what I said to you earlier?
Yeah, however you guys want to do it.
Spike,
I said to Molly. Go ahead, Stephen A. Go.
When Molly asked that earlier, I said to her, if it were an isolated incident and it was just a young kid, Patrick Ewing would not have reacted that way. That's not who he is. He would not have gone on the podium in a post-game conference and highlighted it the way that it was if it were an isolated
incident. After win over Villanova, too.
That's right. Particularly with just one kid that was probably born after he was playing. Patrick Ewing did this because he talked about a multitude of experiences he's been having at Madison Square Garden, and he felt the need to speak up for it because it's not one isolated incident by some young kid. Patrick Ewing wouldn't do that. Go ahead, Spike.
Well, when I read about this thing, I called Patrick up. Mm. I got his number.
Okay.
Speed dial.
There we go.
Patrick, my brother, was hot. Mm. The indignity, the disrespect. Even if I'm a young kid born after Patrick, but, you know, was with the Knicks, glory years, he's 7'2". And you tell me there's nobody in the vicinity if Patrick's going through the metal detector to say, yo, come here. That's Patrick. Let him through. How does that happen? How? I don't understand it. As I said before, that's not going to happen at Yankee Stadium. It's not going to happen.
Spike.
There has to be some common sense.
Spike, you in going back to She's Gotta Have It, your character was arguing with another character about Bernard King versus Larry Bird and everything. That's all we had as Knicks fans back then was Bernard King. Once he got hurt, we're talking about like Rory Sparrow. Until Patrick Ewing came to the Knicks, they were a laughingstock. The day Patrick Ewing showed up, we expected to go to the playoffs every year. We expected to make runs in the playoffs and usually did. We expected a championship and almost got there. They actually didn't do a good enough job surrounding him with enough offensive talent. But Patrick Ewing kept up his end of the deal. Remember, when he was in college, he was just supposed to be a great defensive player. He turned out to be great both. He set the tone. He worked hard. He led by example. What could New York possibly want? Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley, that was his crime partner. Those two guys held it down for New York in the 80s. Yankees weren't winning anything in the 80s. The Knicks held it down on a nightly basis in Madison Square. Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley, and there was Spike Lee courtside. And all three of you are harassed at the Garden?
Can I take my glasses off?
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I'm laughing, but it's sad. It's so sad. It's sad.
And it's also arrogance, because guess what? When you mess with folks, particularly at Madison Square Garden, you know why? Because you know folks are coming no matter what, as you point out, Max. And I'm not talking about just the Knicks. I'm talking about the business of Madison Square Garden, the Mecca, whether it's hockey, whether it's basketball, whether it's concerts or other things. You've got
Billy Joel.
You got a lot of action coming at Madison Square Garden, so you're doling. You're always going to get your money. And as a result, you don't pay a price for creating this kind of environment that could potentially alienate folks, because there's always a line of people willing to come to the Garden.
Well, except the Brooklyn Nets now changed that equation a little bit. It changes the equation a little bit.
People ain't going to stop coming to see the Knicks, Max, not New York.
Listen, if Dolan is, if Dolan's in talks to buy the Hall of Justice, Superman's going to need to show up with an ID. I mean, like, you know, he can't. I don't know what the analogy is, but it's unbelievable. And then Spike, as you, he's 7 feet tall. You think you're in a basketball arena and a 7 foot tall dude who everyone who sees him is like, you know, yeah, oh my God, it's Patrick Ewing. If security's really harassing him,
what if the kid thinks he's going to lose his job, Max? What if he's worried he's going to lose his job and he's just directed to do so? And
I agree with you, Molly. Why would he? Well, I'm not blaming security.
So again, Molly, that you're saying,
yeah,
is coming from the top. Are you not saying that?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's what I guess I'm saying by asking that question. Yes, I am. Yeah, that's the rules that are being told to be enforced.
This was a directive.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I hear you.
That's where I'm going with it.
It was a directive.
Why do you think, Spike, I have a question. Why do you think, like, it's sometimes Dolan's behavior doesn't add up to me other than he wants to flex his muscles. Even by making the wrong decision, at least he's exercising his will and having some power, displaying it. What is the upside in doing that to Patrick Ewing, in doing that to Charles Oakley, in doing that to you? The three ambassadors of the team's glory days in the last several decades. What's the upside? Why do it? What's the motive?
I guess because he can.
Yeah. Plain and simple.
All right.
Because he can.
Yeah, drop the mic. We'll leave it there. Spike's going to stick around with us. Guys, let's get into a couple more NBA topics while we have him. We'll start with this one. So this week, Pelicans coach Stan Van Gundy appeared as a guest on the Intersection with Jason Page podcast. And when discussing NBA priorities, Van Gundy said the following, quote, "The one thing I will criticize the league office and other people who say safety is our number one concern. No, it's not. It's your number two concern. Your number one concern, that's making money. Your number two concern is, while we're making the money, let's try to keep everyone as safe as we can. Let's just be honest about that." Max, are these Stan Van Gundy comments a big deal or no big deal? Max up first.
I mean, look, he's telling the truth. It's no big deal because even Stan Van Gundy is a man. Like, he'll tell you what he thinks. He's not afraid. And he's just, it's not like Stan's sitting there going, "Listen to this profound thought I have." He's like, "Hey, everybody, it's a business." You know, it's like getting mad at a shark for eating something. It's not a moral question for a shark. That's what a shark does. A business, by definition, all it is making money. That's all a business cares about. And then you have, even in terms of like the good outreach they do in the community, sure, that's about the people in the business who actually care about that, but it's also very much about the bottom line, because we exist in a culture where you at least have to show public facing that you do care about it, because that also affects your bottom line. Of course the number one priority is making money, and I don't think Stan thinks he's making a big deal. He's just stating what's obviously true.
Well, that might be true. Well, first of all, what he's saying is on the money. But let's not act like it's a bad thing. The fact of the matter is that people ain't playing for free. They ain't working for free. There's an economy. You know, one of the things that I've religiously brought up, and I've been bringing this up from day one, I said safety of human beings obviously is paramount. We all get that. But you know something, Max? I have a mortgage. I have bills in my home and what have you. Regardless of what was going on during this pandemic, there was never a month went by that I didn't receive those bills. I never saw one company say, "COVID-19 is going on, you don't have to pay." They're coming for their money. So when you talk about people's quality of life, when you talk about people's abilities to feed their family, keep a roof over their head, and things of that nature, we can't ignore that reality. And so, obviously, when we're talking about the NBA, we take into account the millions of dollars some of these players, all of these players are making, basically. And we take into account what the coaches get paid and all that stuff. What we ignore repeatedly is the thousands upon thousands of people these sports leagues employ. And we can't ignore that. I'm not saying that you shove aside safety. I'm not saying that you don't prioritize the health of human beings and things of that nature, Spike. What I'm saying is, let's stop acting like it's a crime to pay attention to economics as well. Because bills got to get paid. That's just the reality of the situation. And when folks speak, like Stan Van Gundy is I love Stan Van Gundy. He's incredibly honest. I wish they do a better job defensively because last night they got blown out by 30 by Minnesota, which is a different subject for another day. I mean, damn.
Different subject. That's a different subject.
He wishes too.
That's a different subject. But I applaud and respect his honesty. But Stan Van Gundy ain't coaching for free. The NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, and everybody else in between have a right to want to pay attention to the economics when nobody's playing for free. Listen, the NCAA tournament is going on, and Jay Billis comes on my show yesterday, Stephen A's World, on ESPN Plus, and specifically states there will be an NCAA tournament. The NCAA made that very clear. They said, because we got rights to fulfill. We have no choice. The NCAA tournament will march forward. Why? Economics. Let's grow up and stop acting like, oh, my God, this somebody is so wrong for paying attention to that. When you get in a check, too. That's all I'm saying.
Spike?
Well, we live in an American capitalist society.
Yeah.
And money talks, BS walks. Yeah. And what's important, what I'm going to say right now, and it's not really talking about the NBA, but there's been many, many cases where decisions were made in favor of the money and people died. I mean, that's not a news flash. The cigarette industry knew way, way back what cigarettes did. They hid it. And that's not the only example. Money, I mean, we live in a country where people will get on bended knee and kneel before the altar of the almighty dollar. And if people gotta die, that's the cost of doing business.
Well, let me say
it's
one
not
thing.
New.
Let me say one thing about that. Stephen A, you brought it up about and Spike, you sound like you're saying, hey, this is not new, and maybe it's not the greatest thing, but this is the truth. And in the cigarette company case, they also added nicotine, which is addictive. So not only do they know it's killing you, they're having you to take more and more of it because they're trying to make money. And I bring up the point that corporations, businesses are in the business of. That's their existence is about making money. That's what they do. Getting mad at them for it's like getting mad at like a shark for eating. Like that's what it does.
But it's how you make the money, though. That's the difference.
This is what I'll say about what Stephen A. brought up, how you're kind of defending it in a way, Stephen A., like, hey, they have an economy. We like to think that we believe human life has infinite value, but we don't. People generally don't. If you hear about a crash on a car, a train, a plane, and you hear two people die, you feel worse than if one did, you know? And that means that it means that you can have more tragedy than a single human life. Infinity times two is still infinity, and yet you feel worse. It's a bigger tragedy, meaning we don't believe each life has infinite value. And if people don't think that corporations even do cost-benefit analysis or governments in terms of human life, you're crazy. That absolutely that was done. I think most of the issue with a pandemic, for example, is people believe the previous administration, they didn't agree with their calculation. They thought, no, they're placing too great an emphasis on the economy, not a great enough emphasis on human life.
I totally agree.
Yeah, but not that we all believe that we should take no risks at all in order to have an economy.
I don't disagree with anything you or Spike is saying. I'm just saying there is a reality that is inescapable.
Real talk.
Because of it being perpetual, that we got to stop acting like we're above. The fact of the matter is that, Max, you and I never took a day off when the pandemic hit. Do you know that? When sports stopped, when the NBA was canceled March 11th, Spike, Max Kellerman and myself and Molly Kieran was on this airwaves every day. We were doing work and took pay cuts. But let me be very clear. We got something. We got enough to pay our bills. It ain't an accident. You understand? I'm just saying, let's not be phony about that. And I'm not accusing Stan Van Gundy because I love Stan Van Gundy. I'm not accusing him or anybody else of being that way. I'm just saying this is the world we live in. Let's not acting like we don't know it and we're not participants in it and to some degree enablers of it.
Yeah,
we are.
The question is not whether or not we participate. Obviously, everyone does. The question is the degree to which we participate how we value the risk versus the reward and okay. all of that.
Okay, yeah. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that one.
Guys, we got time for one more? I want to do this. So a recent article by our Kevin Arnovitz about three-point shooting has created conversation lately in the NBA. The article notes that some execs and coaches worry that the NBA might finally be reaching a critical mass. Some say the three-point ball has created a monotonous rhythm to the game, and others say that it has distorted the scoring system. Adam Silver joined Mike Greenberg's radio show yesterday, had this to say.
We're constantly looking at tinkering at the game. We've moved the three-point line. As you recall, we moved it in once, then we moved it back out, then we moved it to a slightly different place on the floor. I think as the caliber of the shooting has gotten better, I mean, my early days in the league, everyone used to complain there was too much dunking. And that we had a lot of great athletes in the league, but they weren't skilled in the way that you see a lot of these players now. So are we at the right balance? I'm sure there may be some adjustments we can make. I mean, I think, again, there's so much great about the game right now. But the three-point line in particular is something we'll continue to look at.
Stephen A., where are you on this? Do you think there's a problem with the three-point line?
Not really. I mean, you could make the argument that it's a problem. I would tell you it depends on the team. I would tell you, if you're looking at the New York Knicks, hell yeah. If you're looking at the Golden State Warriors, the Utah Jazz, a couple other teams, I would tell you no. I mean, it depends. Let me ask you a question. When Steph Curry took the league by storm and was raining threes, did we complain? Only time I ever saw Spike Lee complaining about threes was when Reggie Miller hit him. I never saw him complaining when John Starks hit him. Okay? Wait a minute now. Shooting is a part of the game. Now, if you want to change a rule, for example, let's just say when Wilt Chamberlain was dominating the league because he was a foot taller than practically everybody else, you can understand why the rim needed to be a bit higher. You understand? Or you wanted to outlaw Duncan because of my
God. Yeah, but what about the Lou Alcindor when UCLA and they outlawed Duncan?
That's right. The Lou Alcindor at UCLA. But check this out. And if you wanted to sit up there and say, here's the only modification I would consider about the three-point shot, y'all. Move it back 6 inches to a full foot. That's it. Make it a little bit harder.
Well,
that's all.
This is my
outside
feeling about
of that,
that.
Please,
they'll just start learning right how to hit that. Here's the problem: the most efficient way to play a sport's not necessarily the most pleasing, right? In MMA, it turns out just grappling and little maneuvers. So eventually, the UFC said, "No, y'all got to stand up. You can't just spend the whole time on the floor." They just changed the rules. And Is this product a little monotonous with the threes? Yes, it is. Let's not – look, when Steph was doing it, he was the only one doing it. Now everyone's bombing threes all the time. Some dude's taking 10, 11 threes a game. Team's taking 50 threes in a game. It's making the product worse. They should figure out a way to fix it. I would suggest this. Why is that the only shot worth 3 points? And why is it always awarded by distance? Why not have certain areas, even in the interior or in the mid-range, worth three? Maybe if you have a defender on you or something like that. There are ways to tinker with it, so other shots are also worth an extra point or have extra value so that you get the kind of game you want to see. I don't love this with just 3-3-3-3-3. That's not the basketball I grew up with.
Well, I think to be a three-point play, but a sky hook. Why has no one, who else does that? And I asked Kareem this. He says, even on the Lakers, he was trying to, tell some of the centers, just show them how to do it, and no one wants to do the sky hook.
Yeah. Magic did it. Had the baby hook.
Yeah, I mean, Magic and Kareem play together, though.
Of course.
I don't give a damn about no three-point play for no sky hooks. Spike, what's
wrong? He's fresh. He knows Spike's right.
So what? That's just a move. I mean,
so what? Why not give an extra point for a move?
No. You're shooting 24 feet away from the basket.
That's
something entirely different. What's wrong with you?
Give an extra point for a dunk.
That's ridiculous.
Spike Lee, we'll see you courtside. Thank you for being with
us.
Thank you for showing us what loyalty really is. Loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. Like Kendrick. Bye, everybody.